Well, I think the first thing to understand in general is that the entire far right scene has, over the past few years, has sort of weaponized youth culture itself and positioned themselves as countercultural to the mainstream. And in so doing, have kind of used irony and humor and wit and kind of create this environment that is game playing, coding, and fun in the messaging and in the way they communicate. And the best example of that is through memes, these kind of meme-driven communication online that then inspires offline action and violence, like in the Boogaloo scene, which emerged as a joke among teenagers. But, you know, before you know it, within a year, you have, you know, grown adult men wearing Hawaiian shirts and showing up at the shelter in place orders to protest government tyranny as part of this Boogaloo scene, and, you know, rapidly growing on social media. So it's, you know, it is that combination of organic, evolving online ecosystems that support creative and playful forms of communication, but that somehow inspire that offline violence that is a hallmark of the new and modern far-right scenes in ways that are really totally different from what we were seeing, you know, in the era of the peak of the KKK or the Aryan Brotherhood or backwoods kind of militia gangs.
The book is titled Hate in the Homeland, the New Global Far Right. I'd like to know, first of all, why you chose to write this book.
Well, I had been I spent 20 years working in Germany as a researcher, as a faculty member of, you know, studying what I considered even myself to be fringe subcultural youth developments and school-based responses to resurgent far-right extremism. So I was studying the coding, the symbols, the modification, the ways that the aesthetics were being mainstreamed, the move away from the kind of racist skinhead, shaved head, and bomber jacket and into a much more mainstream style. And I finished that book, which was the second book I had written. That book was called The Extreme Gone Mainstream, turned it in, and 2 months later, Charlottesville happens. And so, you know, I saw the khakis and the polo shirts along with everyone else and really rapidly became aware that the same thing I had been studying in Germany for a decade or more had really emerged here and was rapidly swept up into public conversations, public writing, testifying before Congress. I mean, it's been the most unusual and unpredictable turn in an ordinary professor's career that somebody could imagine, I think. And realized that that previous book had really been an academic book or a more academic book. And I wanted to write something for the public that explained what I felt was some of the things that were missing in our approach collectively to trying to understand the rising far right. And that is, rather than approaching it only as a question of how or why people are being radicalized or how extremist groups recruit from strategies and tactics, we also needed to ask where people encounter extremist messages in their everyday lives. And if you look at the questions of where and you look at the spaces and places, we get a much better and more creative list of places where we could think about intervening.
We in the past have thought about skinheads and neo-Nazis, but it's a far different thing that's happening now in the U.S. and abroad. And you mentioned the Boogaloo Boys earlier. There are other organizations as well. So who comprises the modern day far right movements?
So the far right comprises a spectrum of groups that share a number of elements and that exist in different places within that spectrum. So one is anti-democratic and dehumanizing kinds of attitudes and beliefs about supremacy, whether that's male supremacy, white supremacy, Christian supremacy, right? There's different forms of supremacy, but it's a kind of us versus them mentality that puts people in a hierarchy and that believes that one group is superior and better than another. So there's dehumanization, there's anti-democratic attitudes and beliefs that are pro-authoritarian or don't protect minority rights or infringe on the rights of the press, let's say. And then you have conspiracy theories, you have single actor, you know, single issue extremist groups like anti-abortion groups, you have extremist groups, you have those that are really at the fringe motivated by violence, who are accelerationists, who are trying to bring about the downfall of systems, and you have the militias that are anti-government, right? So there's a wide spectrum they don't always agree with each other. And that's why you had actually the Unite the Right rally. It was called the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville because they that was the attempt to bring together these disparate and often warring factions of the right wing together and try to unify them into something more powerful, which didn't actually work. They continued to be at odds with each other, but it did bring a lot more attention and momentum into these scenes.
Cynthia Miller Idris is an American University professor, and she's author of the book Hate in the Homeland, The New Global Far Right. JJ Green, WTOP News.